19 years ago when we started, they were going, oh, I have a platelet disorder, or I have von Willebrand's, but nobody knew types and severities.
Yeah.
And now they do. Even though we're still having and dealing with struggles, mm-hmm. we've come so far.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a long way to go, but we've made a lot of progress.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And it's because they get together like this.
Yeah.
And then they go back and they're like, I learned how to speak up for myself.
Yeah.
And they do.
Welcome back to our third and final episode of Empowering Women. That was Melissa Reifke, and she's so right. Getting together like this has a huge and quantifiable impact on the women who attend. They leave with much more than just genetic information, a belly full of s'mores, and some new Zumba moves. They leave with a sense of empowerment, which they then bring back to their families and communities in various ways. This empowerment is the culmination of the topics of our previous two episodes, Uniting and Believing. And it's the aspect of this retreat that is so central to its mission, it's in the name.
I am strong.
I am bold.
I am vibrant.
I am courageous.
I am confident.
I am awesome.
I am divine.
I am lovable.
If we had all the time in the world, we would hear from every single attendee, because they all had inspiring stories of how they've found and shared their empowerment. But given our limited time, we're going to hear a few standout examples, starting with political involvement. Darlene from Dexter, Missouri, had never been particularly political before the birth of her grandson, Danny. But when her family discovered outdated laws in Missouri that could put his life in danger, they did something about it. Here's Darlene with the whole story.
So Danny Noah is our very first grandson.
Yeah.
And he was born in December of 2010. Mm-hmm. Had a bruise at 7 days old, had his first bruise.
Yeah.
And I actually knew at that moment something was wrong.
Yeah.
Fast forward till he was 11 months old, had his first mouth bleed. And that caused the diagnosis of severe hemophilia B. So our family we're a proactive family.
Yeah.
And the doctor, you know, said, never leave home without his factor. You're an hour from the nearest HTC. Nobody's got time to go home, get it, come back. So we said, okay, let's make a plan.
Yeah.
And have an emergency bag, have had it from the beginning, thought he would be protected if there was an automobile accident and mom and dad were unable to speak or move and do anything for him. And fast forward then to late 2014, when we found out that no, because of old existing protocols, our paramedics are prohibited from administering patient-carried meds. So if it's not on the ambulance, they are not supposed to give it.
The National Hemophilia Foundation and local chapters feel strongly that our community members should feel empowered to contact their local EMS, ERs, and fire stations to understand local protocols and how they might impact their own family. Laws vary by state. If you have further questions or concerns, please reach out to your local chapter.
Our family found this out actually from a very good friend with hemophilia who had a car wreck, who found out the hard way. He broke his right wrist. And hit his head, couldn't give himself factor. The paramedics couldn't, got him to the ER. The ER doctor would not.
Oh my gosh.
A nurse called his wife for him. She got there, she administered his factor. They did the CT scan and he was having a brain bleed.
Oh my gosh.
And that's how we found out about the protocols.
Wow.
And we really were a regular family.
Yeah.
And started calling people like, do you know about this? Somebody needs to do something. Well, nobody was doing anything.
Yeah.
And everybody was just saying, it's too hard. You'll never be able to get it changed. And we knew that basically I just tell people God had given us a new mission.
Yeah.
And we started in March of 2015,
mm-hmm.
went to visit our capital and said, hey, we have a hit issue. We don't know what to do. We need your help.
Yeah.
But we know that it's 2015, and if we all work together, we can change this.
Yep.
So started working with our state EMS association and having meeting after meeting with ideas on the table, throwing ideas off the table, and it resulted in legislation for the state that we passed in 2 years.
Amazing.
So Missouri is now the first and only state that has legislation that provides for our EMS and actually technically paramedics, because they're the only ones that can administer medications, to administer patient-carried meds.
I want to pause for a second here, because this is extraordinary. One family, recognizing a huge flaw in our system, put their courage and energy into fixing the problem, and they did. How many lives did they save? How many outcomes did they improve? All because they saw a problem and decided to fix it. And now Darlene is at Camp Allen, sharing her family's story with a whole community of other motivated women. This exchange of ideas is one of the most profound aspects of this retreat. And as great as the internet can be in connecting us, nothing beats having a conversation face to face. When women are able to come together and share and be heard and absorb, they take this incredible inspiration and insight home with them to their communities, HTCs, and chapters all around the Great Plains. And they make real, meaningful change.
What we figured out the best solution in Missouri is to allow the paramedics to follow the emergency medical orders of the patient's specialist.
Yeah.
So we are, we're trying to educate our families that they need to carry those. We have a template we've created to help the doctor.
Carry the doctor's orders.
Orders, yes. And to teach them, it has to be orders on letterhead, signed, dated, not older than a year.
Yeah.
So every year you get that updated and it's official orders so that then they can go by that and has the contact information if there is a question. Right now, that's the best solution that everyone has come up with.
Yeah.
It's been great since we passed the bill in Missouri. We are now working on the national level. Working with several national EMS associations and with HRSA and with American Academy of Pediatrics, having regular meetings. So we have gotten everyone's attention. Everyone has now, they all agree it's an issue, and we're trying to work through the liability portions of those issues and the education portion, and then also educating paramedics.
Right.
That's another one of our goals, is a nationwide paramedic education campaign.
Yeah.
So, just raising awareness, getting regulations changed nationwide, educating our paramedics, and educating our families.
We heard from a number of people who once identified as apolitical and who now see activism as a big part of their personal empowerment. Education is another form of empowerment. Educating yourself, educating others, learning how to advocate. Even before she knew what it was called, that's the work our next speaker identified as her life's passion.
So I didn't know what it was called at the time, and Edna was like, well, you need to teach them how to advocate for themselves. I'm like, oh, that's the word I need to use. Okay, yeah. So now I need to learn how to get people to advocate for themselves. And what does that entail? You need to know all the right questions to ask your doctors when you go in to see them. Well, my name is Faith, and I have been diagnosed with antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, protein CNS deficiency. I have the lupus anticoagulant, and I also have lupus.
Faith has been through a lot of challenges in her life. She isn't easily discouraged, and where others see obstacles, she sees opportunity.
I felt after probably about the 15th year of me working and getting knowledge about different things, that was that block. And that block I call RN.
Mm-hmm. Is that a medicine?
No, registered nurse.
RN.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I call that block RN because if you're not a registered nurse, your voice almost gets silent.
Really?
In some avenues. And I'm like, that's not fair because I have more knowledge than any nurse I know, when it comes to thrombosis.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so because I don't have that title, you guys don't want to hear me. And that's if I want to talk to my senators or whatever, you know. But if I have this title, oh, well, she's a registered nurse. What I understand, not a problem. I'm resolving that issue. I'm going to nursing school.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I'm not just going to nursing school, but I plan on getting my DNP, Doctorate of Nursing Practice.
Amazing.
Because this is my passion.
Yeah.
I don't ever want another woman to go through what I went through and not know that there are things out there, resources out there, and people to help. You are not your diagnosis, but we're going to explain to you how to live with your diagnosis.
Yes.
And how to advocate, what questions you need to ask, what things you need to do, how to best take care of you, because it's going to be different for every woman.
Yeah.
And that's my ultimate goal.
I was so moved by Faith's empowerment, and I was curious about how much of that had been cultivated at this retreat. Here's her answer.
I came with my own sense of empowerment coming in But I feel that that sense of empowerment has just been tripled, enhanced, because I gained power from seeing, hearing, and watching some of these young women and women grow from the first moment I ever met them. The first moment I met them, they were shy, quiet, wouldn't say anything, going through a whole lot, but nobody would ever know because I won't open up. Because if I open up, then everybody know my business. And now we are past, it's not my business, it's what I need to do and how I need to move forward and what's going to be the best, not only for my physical health, but my mental health. I can't keep it all bottled up. And so I'm empowered when I look at that.
Faith's been attending this retreat since the early 2000s, and I asked her what it's been like to watch it grow over the years.
What I love about this is we empower them to go back home, go back into their community where they live, not just talk to women, but talk to people in general. So talk to your police department, talk to your fire department, talk to your, you know, various doctors and people from your church and everything, because you'd be surprised who else is dealing with the thing that you're currently dealing with that they don't even know they're dealing with it. And the other thing is, when you need that medical help, they know you have it. They know where to look for information. And this comes from this retreat. Yeah. Make sure you have that vow of life. Make sure you've already talked to your fire department, because they're going to be the first responder.
Yeah.
They're going to be the first one that comes in. So when you're bleeding or when you know you have this clot in your leg or whatever, they know what they're supposed to do to take care of you, because you've already educated them on how to take care of you.
Education, advocacy, activism, empowerment takes on so many forms. Even sharing one's story is an act of empowerment because it can mean reliving some of the most difficult parts of a person's life. And for many of these women, the motivation for sharing their story was remarkably selfless. The thing I heard again and again was, I never want another person to have to go through what I've gone through. And thanks to retreats like this one, things do appear to be changing for the next generation.
For me, one of the best things I've ever seen with the retreat is when you're at the airport, they meet you there, and they got this little sign, and it's when them children come off the plane, and they see them other kids there, and it's like, yes, I'm not the only one that has this.
This is Shirley.
The relief that those children, because us as grown-ups can absorb so much more, and them kids get so much out of seeing other kids, because they don't understand. They're new in the world, and they're being dished all this stuff.
Yeah.
And all the medical advice is just going over their head, and then when they get here and they see another child with the same thing they have, they learn just so much from being able to talk to, and that's given me great satisfaction just watching the children.
This is Vanessa.
Our kids aren't afraid to speak about their condition. You know, before in the past, nobody wanted to speak about it because of the AIDS epidemics and, you know, hepatitis and everything. And now our kids walk up, I have hemophilia. This is what it is. You don't need to be scared of me. They're very confident in talking about their disorder. They're told to go see their congressman and speak about these things. And, you know, that's the biggest part is before, we're shying away, but now we're going, kids, step out there, do it now. And then they have that voice. So it's great to see.
The weekend was winding down, but there was still one important thing we had yet to experience, an annual tradition, casino night, themed casino night. Here's Melissa from episode one explaining the tradition.
We always have a theme every year. I mean, we've done everything from Phantom of the Opera to Fiesta Padres to a Mexican, you know, just general Mexican fiesta. We've had Halloween. Where this year's theme is Jammin' Sisters. So everybody will be in their pajamas. When we fill our paperwork out for the venue here, we always tell them, because they ask us for noise considerations. We said, okay, well, our first night, it's going to be loud party music. Friday night, it's going to be loud party music for Zumba. Saturday night, it's just loud.
Chaos.
And we tell them, please be conscientious of who you're booking when you book us, because we are a unique group of ladies, and we have fun. I mean, this is our chance to just kick back, and it's all about us. We, most of the year, we're taking care of everybody else, children, spouses, parents, you know, whatever. This weekend, it's all about us. And we make sure we do that.
Okay, all right, so now raise your hand if you've got 21 or blackjack. Raise your hand. Raise it so everybody can see it. While their hands are raised, grab the chips! Just grab them!
And before we knew it, Sunday morning was upon us. Everyone gathered in the meeting room, their bags packed, for the retreat's closing ceremony, which Melissa led.
This is a rock. And you know why? Because she's there for everybody else. She's their stability. She's their person to lean on. She's their person to call when she needs a shoulder. This is a rock. And every one of you are rocks. And that's not a bad thing. That's a positive, because that means people really depend on you. You have a meaning and a purpose for so many people in your lives. But sometimes you need that same thing. So what you're going to do is you're going to walk up. I want you to pick up a rock out of this bag. And on the back of it, one side of it says, I am. And on the other side, it has a positive statement. And it's all these positive statements apply to every single one of y'all. That rock is for you to keep. It's very small. You could keep it in your pocket. You could put it by your bedside. Put it in your bathroom on your vanity. Put it by your computer at your workstation. And when you need just that little bit of encouragement, when you are just like at the end of the ropes, pick that rock up and turn it over and read it. And know you're going to be okay. So I want everybody to come up. We'll go with this table first.
I am awesome.
I am kind.
All right.
I am whole.
I am worthy.
I am vibrant.
I am exquisite.
I am proud.
I am proud.
There we go. Say it with some emotion.
I am awesome.
There you go.
When we started this camp, I was 8 years old, and it was a massive, massive deal for me because it helped me understand I wasn't a freak, I wasn't alone, I came into this whole thought process, I think when I was about 9 or 10 years old, that I'm my own norm. You don't tell me what's normal. You as a doctor don't tell me what's normal. I create it. And to me, I'm normal, and people with normal blood is what doctors would like to say, or normal clotting, they're the abnormal ones.
Right. Here, we're normal. We're normal here.
Yeah.
Well, not all the way normal, but.
If my voice is almost gone already, so, you know, we haven't been too normal.
So, but, you know, bleeding disorders-wise, right. When we're here, we're normal.
Being just like everybody else is not something we're generally encouraged to strive for in our lives. The emphasis is usually on finding what makes you different, what makes you special. But for women with bleeding and clotting disorders, they've spent way too much of their lives feeling like the odd woman out. Here at the Empowering Women with Bleeding and Clotting Disorders retreat, they finally, finally, if only for a few precious days, get to be just one of the gang. The gang of women from all around the Great Plains region who unite here at Camp Allen outside Houston, Texas, spend a weekend being believed, and then return to their communities with a renewed sense of empowerment. Uniting, believing, and empowering women. This brings us to the end of our series. I would like to personally thank everyone who shared their story with us and the entire Empowering Women retreat for welcoming our team into their experience. It was an honor to be there, and you are so inspiring. Also, thanks to all of you out there. I hope you've enjoyed our series, and I hope it's inspired you to find empowerment in any way, no matter how small, in your own life. I'm Heather Robb. Thanks so much for listening.
Bloodstream Stories is proud to bring you this special series, produced and directed by Heather Robb, with support from the entire Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited teams. Empowering Women is written by Heather Robb with support from Seth Kirshner, edited by Josh Davis, mixed by Josh Davis, with support from Michael Capuano at Iceman Sound and Scotty Ray. Executive producers Patrick James Lynch and Ryan Geelan. To respect the privacy of the participants, we are not including the interviewees in the credits, but we'd like to extend a special, huge thank you to Melissa Reifke, Ed Kubler, and each of the women who courageously share their story for this series in hopes of helping others understand they are not alone. Visit www.bloodstreampod.com for more information on this series, on the Empowering Women Retreat, and our monthly flagship podcast, The Bloodstream Podcast. Bloodstream Podcast is a free monthly podcast that takes a 360-degree look at the bleeding disorders community, complete with community news, informed opinionating, and amazing in-depth interviews you won't hear anywhere else. You can find it and our other podcast series anywhere podcasts are distributed: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, your favorite podcast app, and elsewhere. If you like this long-form series, may I suggest a couple others from our team? VWD Diagnosis, Treatment, and Life is a 90-minute, three-episode journey through all facets of living with VWD, featuring interviews with patients from all over the world, clinicians, and experts from NHF and HFA. You can hear this by subscribing to Bloodline, our long-form channel, anywhere podcasts are distributed, or visit www.bloodlinepod.com. Also, check out The Factor Revolution, The Last 60 Years in Hemophilia Treatment, a three-episode special series with over 40 interviews from community members, doctors, experts, and advocates. We take a deep look at the history of factor treatment from the 1950s to today. The Factor Revolution pulls together source material, news reports, white papers, and original audio content from the film Bad Blood and the HIV Story Project. You can hear this by searching the back catalog of Bloodstream Podcasts anywhere podcasts are distributed, or visit www.bloodlinepod.com. Happy listening.